The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Well, hello, friends and neighbors, and welcome on this Friday, August 23rd, around 8:30 a.m. Welcome to the weekly Bill Press Pod Roundtable, where we look back on the big stories of the week with some of the sharpest political reporters in Washington. And joining us this week, John Allen from NBC News, Lester Holt's eyes and ears on the campaign trail. Hello, John. Good to see you.
Lester has wonderful eyes and ears of his own, but I appreciate being mentioned in the same sentence.
You're part of the good team there. And with us also from Inside Elections, Leah Escarinam, tracking every 2019 and 2020 race in the country from dog catcher to president. She's on top of it. Hi, Leah.
Hi. I don't know who's running for dog catcher, full disclosure.
I think some of the 2020 Democratic candidates may end up running for dog catcher the way it is. Well, you would think that with the House and the Senate out of town, it would have been a quiet week. But of course, Donald Trump was in town, so it was anything. But in fact, leaving for the White House for Kentucky on Wednesday. He spent almost an hour talking with reporters on the South Lawn of the White House before hopping on Marine One, giving us almost enough of material that we could talk about it for weeks just from that one little news conference. Greenland seemed to be the number one topic. John, we thought it was a joke. It turned out he was serious.
Yeah, Greenland is an ice sheet, and Iceland is actually pretty green. I think that's something that not every American understands.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I think it's important to recognize.
Does he know that?
I think he probably does, certainly at this point. Look, it's not irrational to view the entire world and say there's limited property in the world, and if you could buy a huge chunk of it, it would make sense to buy a huge chunk of it.
Doesn't that have to be for sale first?
Well, and look, you know, we both live in a neighborhood where there's interest in the property. And I sometimes get phone calls from random people that say, hey, I'm interested in buying your house. And I politely say no, because my wife would kill me if I sold our house out from under her and our children. You know, when that happens, usually the rejection notice, you know, doesn't come along with the buyer coming by your house and then spray painting it with epithets about the people who live in there, which is sort of what the president did when he started trashing the officials from Denmark.
Yeah. Well, in fact, Leah, he was...
by the way, especially when it's an empty lot that you were trying to buy.
He was very upset by her language when she rejected his offer.
The Prime Minister used a terrible word when describing something that we've been talking about for years with our country. And I thought it was not a nice statement, the way she blew me off. I know Denmark well. I have many friends from Denmark. And we treat countries with respect. She shouldn't treat the United States that way by saying, what an absurd. She said, absurd. That's not the right word to use. Absurd.
By the way, I think it's absurd, but... I don't want to quibble over small points, but that's not such a nasty word.
I mean, I have many friends from Denmark. I don't know if yeah. anyone has ever said that or ever will again.
The Danes are great.
I mean, I don't have very many friends it just doesn't make a lot of sense. But what I do think is interesting is we think about Donald Trump as this master of PR who's able to mold the news cycle and figure out how to take these kind of crazy ideas and make them seem palatable. And this was just a massive PR failure. I mean, way to take an idea that maybe has some substance to it and make it a total punchline.
Do you think, did he ever consider, like, John, trading it for Utah, maybe, or...
I mean, we've heard
Kentucky, a red state.
Arizona might be his best chance heard, this year.
Yeah. We've heard Puerto Rico as a possibility. Right. You know, there are 55,000 or so people in Greenland. And if you were able to get it admitted as a state to the union, you would have two senators for 55,000 people. Living in the District of Columbia, I my jaw would like just hit the floor if I had to look at that. You know, because we have so many more people and no representation in Congress, or no voting representation in Congress. You know, I think this too shall pass, but it is, on a more serious kind of note, another example of Donald Trump picking fights with his friends, you know, and just deciding that it's okay to punch them. And he seems to make friends with his enemies and treat them very, very well, and treat his friends very, very poorly.
To the extent that Donald Trump's supporters, right, will go to any length to back him up, even when he says something absurd. I thought it was interesting that the Republican National Committee came out with a fundraising letter right away saying, help us, no, let's support Donald Trump in his efforts to make America grow.
Oh, gosh.
That's the reasoning on it, right?
We all know that Republicans and especially Trump supporters have been cheering on Greenland for years now. Yeah. At every Trump rally, that's all we hear about is Greenland. No, I mean, I think it's just further proof that Donald Trump is the Republican Party and that Republicans think that their path to victory is basically through Donald Trump. And anybody who does decide to go against the president is putting him or herself, but since Republicans, mostly himself, at a political risk.
I think it's fair to say that if Barack Obama had suggested buying Greenland from Denmark, that soon people would have figured out that he was actually born in Greenland before he moved to Kenya, before he moved to Hawaii. By the way, none of that is true, and I'm not suggesting that it is true, but you would hear this public outcry that there was some sort of nefarious reason, why President Obama was doing it, rather than trying to make America grow.
Right. The old rules no longer apply to this presidency.
All right. Enough about Greenland. The more serious, doubling down that Donald Trump did on Wednesday, talking to reporters, was he came back to this statement, building on his attacks on the four women called the Squad in Congress, whom he's accused of being of hating Israel and being anti-Semitic, and enlarging that to say now that any Jew who would vote for any Democrat, well, let him say it.
In my opinion, you vote for a Democrat, you're being very disloyal to Jewish people, and you're being very disloyal to Israel. And only weak people would say anything other than that.
So American Jews who vote for Democrats are either ignorant or totally disloyal.
Or weak, I think, or was weak. At the end there. It's hard to imagine that that was a message that was targeted toward Jewish voters. You know, like, that was not something that's going to get Jewish voters riled up and ready to support Donald Trump. It seems like it's targeted at people who maybe are not big fans of Jewish voters.
He seems to think, John, that it's going to attract Jews, American Jews, to vote for Republicans.
He may think that. I don't think anybody else who's familiar with the American Jewish community thinks that. If anything, you've basically got a three-quarters, one-quarter split. About three-quarters of the Jewish community is Democratic, quarter Republican. What he's actually doing there is probably cutting in half the quarter that's Republican and making half of it think that he's lost his mind, because half of them will look at that and say that that it's disgusting that he would accuse the Democratic Jewish people of being disloyal to Israel, because he is inserting that canard of dual loyalty, or in the first iteration of what he said, where he was much more vague about this, there was almost a canard of quadruple loyalty that he was throwing out there. Israel, the United States, Judaism. I mean, there's like a whole bunch of things that he thought that Jews should be loyal to, but mostly to him. And, you know, it's knowing a little something about the Jewish faith, dissent is really like at the heart of Jewish thought. And so he really put himself, I think, in a bad position with the part of the Jewish community that supports him. I think there's a very small set that would look at it and say, boy, those Jewish Democrats really are disloyal to Judaism and to Israel. And that is a very, very, very hardcore set. And everybody else looks at it and says, you don't know what you're talking about. That said, there are people in the evangelical community that agree with him.
Well, and it reminds me of when Trump talks about black voters and black communities and talks about, you know, what do you have to lose because your communities are so violent or whatever he says. That message is not targeted toward black voters. Donald Trump knows he's not going to win black voters. That is targeted toward people who share the belief that black people are, who are frankly racist. And I think we're seeing something similar with his messaging with Jewish voters, because there's just no way that Jewish voters are going to hear that message and say, that sounds like my president.
And again, as part of that dialogue on Wednesday, he looked up into the sky and said something bizarre, which again, we might take as a joke, but we thought Greenland was a joke too. Here he is.
I am the chosen one.
I am the chosen one? that certainly has echoes.
He also retweeted some stuff from a guy named Wayne Allen Root in Nevada, suggesting that Trump himself was a deity.
Yes.
And for those of us familiar with the
King of the Jews. Some people call me the King of the Jews.
The King of the Jews. And so some of us who are familiar with the Bible, the Torah, pretty much any religious literature, First Commandment says, I am the Lord your God, delivered you out of Egypt, you shall put no other gods before me. That's commandment number one. there are some disputes about which order the commandments come in, depending on which Bible you're looking at, which version. But like, there's no dispute about number one. Number one's like, hey, don't mess with this. I am the God, not Charlemagne the God, but the God. And Donald Trump's like, nah, might be me. Could be me.
Also thinks he's the second coming for Jews.
Oh, yes.
Do not believe in the second.
They don't believe that the first coming.
That's not a Jewish tenet, which again is why I don't think that message was targeted toward actual Jewish voters.
But he's going after the non-college educated white base that he has. I mean, he's trying to drum that up as much as possible, and in doing so is alienating just about everybody else, right? And we see it every day more and more and more.
So, you know, and he also, just in interest of time, he went out as part of that same Wednesday confab there and talked about how much the people out in El Paso loved him, the victims of the mass shooting of the day before, how much they loved him. Which raises a couple of questions to me. I mean, Greenland, King of the Jews, Chosen One, these murder victims love their president, love me. Is he all there? Is anybody raising the question about his mental balance?
I think you just did.
Yeah.
It does feel a little bit like the end of the fireworks show, where you're kind of just using everything that maybe you were holding back before and throwing it out there and seeing if it sticks.
But I don't know whether anybody's raising that question. Okay, obviously don't want to, but...
I'm not sure how different the Donald Trump we're seeing today is from the Donald Trump that we've seen since he first descended the escalator. Like, maybe it's coming faster and more furious.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not sure that there... I don't see what I would describe as a qualitative difference in the behavior of the president. What I may see is a slightly quantitative difference.
And maybe freed up or loosened up because he's been in office 2.5 years and now he knows he can also... Any other politician in America, if they said something about the disloyalty of American Jews, they would apologize. They would try to explain it away. Not Donald Trump. Anybody else would. Mike Pence would. Anybody else.
Mike Pence wouldn't say that.
He wouldn't say it.
There's not a chance in the world that Mike Pence would say that. And the reason that there's not a chance in the world that Mike Pence would say that is because Mike Pence is thoughtful about other people's religious experience and views. And that's not to say that, you know, that Mike Pence necessarily agrees with other people's views or experience. It's not to say that he doesn't do things based on religion that don't offend other people, but he is somebody who is thoughtful about it and also particularly attentive to the Jewish people at times. He went and visited a vandalized Jewish cemetery in St. Mm-hmm. Louis shortly after the last election. I mean, I cannot, you, to your point, I cannot imagine any other public official, much less the president, acting this way.
So Donald Trump's comments have spurred some Republicans to talk about maybe it's important for the party to have a challenge to him in 2020. And the number one person putting that word out, believe it or not, is Anthony Scaramucci.
You mean President Scaramucci,
President,
right?
Scaramucci, right. Leah, is he serious? And should we believe a word he says? Since he left the White House, he actually wrote a book praising Donald Trump less than a year ago.
So I wouldn't put past any politician that they believe that they can win a national election, because I think you have to have a crazy amount of confidence to run for president. That said, I do not see how it could be possible. I see zero path for any Republican, let alone one who's kind of made a joke out of himself and an enemy of the president.
He doesn't talk about himself running. He said his goal is to get somebody to run against Donald Trump.
I mean, we've heard a few people at this point start talking about it. We've heard kind of Jeff Flake say that he's been, former Arizona senator, say that he started to get pressure from donors. We've heard John Kasich's name floated. But I mean, what's pretty clear is that if you are running against Donald Trump in a primary, you're doing it for the symbol of it and for the principle. There's not a real path.
So the one that's been out there, John, is Joe Walsh, former congressman.
Joe Who?
Walsh, talk show host.
I know. I kid. Congressman Walsh has had this interesting transformation where he got a lot of attention as a Tea Party Republican when he ran for Congress, when he was in Congress, and now has decided that he doesn't really want to be mm-hmm. that guy anymore and is now an anti-Trump Republican. But I think he's trying to remain relevant in the national conversation long after he stopped being relevant to the national conversation other than his tweeting against the president. I mean, this is one of those transformations that you kind of look at as a desperate plea to stay relevant. I mean, we watch this with people on broadcast in you know, DC circles all the time, where they go from like one character to another. So I don't think Joe Walsh is going to gain any traction in this in any real way.
Lots and lots to talk about. As we mentioned, we didn't even get to the economy yet or what's happening on the Democratic side of the ticket. We'll be back with John Allen and Leah Scarium in just a moment here on the Bill Press Pod. And today's roundtable is brought to you by the good men and women of the Teamsters Union under the leadership of President Jim Hoffa. 1.14 million strong. They represent not just truck drivers, as you know, but you may be surprised to know they also represent public defenders in Minnesota, vegetable workers in California, sanitation workers in New York, brewers in St. Louis, newspaper workers in Seattle, construction workers in Las Vegas, zookeepers in Pennsylvania, healthcare workers in Rhode Island, bakery workers in Maine, airline pilots, secretaries, and police officers. We salute them all. Check out their website at teamster.org.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back with today's roundtable here on this August 23rd. John Allen from NBC News, Leah Askaranam from Inside Elections. Donald Trump saying this week that he's considering maybe a tax cut, a payroll tax cut, to loom off a, well, he doesn't connect it to the possibility of a recession or a slowdown, but that's what a lot of economists are talking about. Leah, were there a slowdown? Probably the worst possible news for Donald Trump.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we've seen that Donald Trump's approval rating has hovered around 44-45%. We recently saw a poll that saw a dip in the last couple weeks to into the 30s. That might just be an outlier, still too early to know. But President Trump himself isn't very popular as a person. What's popular right now is the economy doing well. What's popular is maybe even some of his policies, but him as a person is not going to be able to run a winning campaign if he can't tout the economy.
So, John, there was the very esoteric bond rating that spooked some economists. The Dow fell when that came up. There are a lot of signs that things, if not again recession, could be slowing down. Is that where we're headed?
If I could predict recessions, I'd be a very wealthy right? man. I think what we're seeing right now is a situation where a lot of those signs exist. And we also have a situation where the government has used basically almost every tool at its disposal to goose the economy. So the fear of a recession is strong, and the fear that a recession would be prolonged because there aren't that many tools to goose the economy is also a very real one, right? So you can't inject a ton of money into the economy because there's nothing left in the cupboard. We have these huge deficits. We're looking down the barrel of years of trillion-dollar deficits. What do? The president right now is looking at a suspension of capital gains taxes on inflation. So basically a windfall for anybody with huge assets. And you know, the folks who are proponents of that say that, you know, the vast majority of people who pay taxes on capital gains inflation make less than $200,000 or make less than $100,000. But the vast majority of the wealth that would be kept as a result of that is at the very top. It also, if you do that, would create a lot of tax shelter opportunities. They're looking at a payroll tax freeze, which would help a lot of people at the lower ends or in the middle end or the middle part. But there are not a lot of options for the government to help if we do go into recession.
So related to the economy, I was struck this week by a report that the Business Roundtable put out. I don't know whether you guys caught up with that. So these are 200 CEOs of the biggest companies in the country, Apple, Pepsi, Walmart, JP Morgan, Bank of America. They put a report saying, we believe that the role of business in this age in the United States of America is not just to take care of shareholders, It's also our job is to take care of our employees and protect the environment and be fair to our suppliers. It's like, sound like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren wrote this report. I guess my question as a skeptic is, do we expect anything to change?
I mean, I was just looking at the Maine Senate race where Susan Collins, Republican, is seeking re-election. And she ended up in national news because of her vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh. That's where all this money came in for her future Democratic opponent. But from what I've heard from people on the ground there, what Democrats are going to be going after Susan Collins for is the Republican tax bill, is the idea that the wealthy got wealthier and the poor didn't get anything out of it. And I think that they're finding it's an effective political message to kind of feed into that idea that Republicans and Trump are trying to kind of pad their own pockets and forgetting about the normal people.
So we're going to see a kinder, gentler business community?
On a podcast, you can't see me licking my finger and putting it to the wind to show what's going on with some of these companies, but they understand what the rhetoric is against them, but they also understand what the law is. Mm-hmm. And the law is that they have to serve shareholder interest and almost exclusively shareholder interest. So the extent that they can make an argument that it serves shareholder interest to be interested in the economy or to care about their employees or whatever.
Or the environment.
I'm sorry, that's the word I was looking for. To the extent that they can do that, they may do a little bit of that. But the bottom line is exactly what they are legally required to do and what they will do. And so the question then becomes, what is it that the political class, meaning all of us, the voters, what is it that they want from the business community? What is it that they want from the lawmakers and from the presidential candidates? And I think the business community is hearing a lot of that in the Democratic Party, and they're hearing it from President Trump, who, by the way, was elected with at least partially a populist message.
Right. So let's jump in now to the Democratic side on 2020. Big news this week, John Hickenlooper dropped out and then turned around a couple of days later and announced he's running for Senate in Colorado, which is what a lot of people think he should have done in the first place. And Jay Inslee dropped out and said he's going to run for a third term as governor of Washington. So now we're down to 22. Yeah. 22 candidates.
Much better.
Yeah. And let me add to that, Julian Castro qualified as number 10 for the next debate on September 12. So is that the field now?
I mean, it's the field today before the next Democratic debate. I'm not going to guess who's going to drop out next because I think it's half personality, half, half looking at the polls.
John, you're chopping here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Seth Moulton dropped out.
Oh, he did today?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. All right, thank you. I almost forgot he was still in. So
yeah.
That makes a little bit of sense.
No surprise. He should have dropped out some time ago.
Yeah. The
probably less traction than Marianne Williamson.
The culling is well underway.
Right. This is good?
That the culling is underway? I mean, I'm not like in a good, bad kind of place to judge. Candidates get out because the money runs out or they're not polling well. And so if you're not polling well and the money ran out, it's time to go.
Right. And the New York Times front page this morning sort of sums it up in the headline that a lot of one steady through this up and down and in and out is Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. He may not be as high as he was over Bernie and Elizabeth, but he's still in number one. The New York Times puts it as some Democrats see Biden as more electable than electrifying. Now, I wouldn't say this was exactly electrifying, but he came out this week with a new ad where he ties himself 100% to Barack Obama.
Joe Biden, you were the first decision I made, and it was the best.
It was a relationship forged in fire. Barack Obama and Joe Biden inherited a world in crisis. And together they passed the biggest economic recovery package in the history of the nation.
Yeah.
Rescued the automobile industry.
It goes on and on like that. Energy, painting
and passed the
Joe Biden as the chosen one, actually.
There's the great scene in this ad where Joe Biden jumps out the window like in The Princess Bride and lands in Barack Obama's arms.
And through that ad, it uses words like steady, strong, stable, right? Electable.
I mean, his wife recently told the crowd that she, even if you don't really like him that much, you know, he'll probably defeat Donald Trump, so you should support him.
I hope my wife says that on our 50th anniversary. I knew he'd be steady and stable, so it worked out that way.
But is this message working, and will it work? It seems to be working. We haven't seen. Look, we haven't had a vote cast in a primary yet, so let's not get ahead of ourselves. But
it's working. I think it's working right now. We've seen him stay totally steady. There are like a handful of reasons why you could argue that Joe Biden would be the most electable candidate. There are a handful of reasons why you would say he would not be the most electable candidate, including his performance in the last couple debates. But there has been this kind of conventional wisdom that's caught on that somebody who's friends with Barack Obama and has seen as Grant and Joe can kind of get a coalition of Obama voters and some of the Trump coalition together in 2020. I don't know, but so, people believe it.
So, John, Elizabeth Warren is certainly more electrifying.
There is no doubt that she has caught fire within the Democratic Party. She's got a tremendous field operation. When I talk to folks in Iowa on the ground who are not in her campaign, they say that if the caucuses were held today, they expect that she would win the caucuses. Hmm. So forgetting the polling for a minute where Joe Biden is ahead, I think all the other candidates recognize that. You saw Kamala Harris go up with television ads in the last couple of weeks. You saw Joe Biden go up with television ads. Pete Buttigieg has put up radio and digital ads in Iowa. They are playing catch up right now with Elizabeth Warren. There's no question that the energy is with her in the Democratic Party. And the big question is that electability one. I think the strength for Joe Biden is that the more Donald Trump gets into places where he is using racist language, where he is making Democrats fearful, the more Joe Biden's numbers go up. His argument for a return to normalcy and steadiness makes sense to a lot of Democrats who are fearful, literally fearful of a Trump presidency. The flip side of that argument, though, is that it's not a zero-sum argument. So it's not that one candidate is electable and the others are not. It's more of a threshold argument. And mm-hmm. if Joe Biden is making the argument that he is electable, that doesn't mean that Elizabeth Warren or Pete Buttigieg or Kamala Harris or Bernie Sanders or somebody else cannot reach that threshold in voters' minds. And so the key for Elizabeth Warren, since that's the person we're talking about, the key for her is to convince Democratic voters who like her better or who are more enthusiastic about her that she is equally electable as Joe Biden is or just more electable than Donald Trump.
The impression that I get in talking to reporters who are on the road, like you and you, is that while Elizabeth Warren is surging, Joe Biden steady, Bernie Sanders still coming in number two for the most part, that Pete Buttigieg and Kamala Harris may have plateaued. Leah, you think?
I mean, I think if you're looking at polling, that's a fair conclusion to draw. I think there's still plenty of time left. We saw, you know, Kamala Harris had a kind of a bump after the first Democratic debates. We haven't seen that.
That was 2 months ago.
Exactly. So there's still time for, first off, Biden to make a mistake or misstep, though I think he's kind of part of his profile is making mistakes and saying things that don't sound totally PC. So that might not actually hurt him. But there's still more debates left and there's plenty of time for people to kind of make a spot for themselves in kind of the top tier. But right now it just seems like the energy is on Elizabeth Warren's side. She's seen the most movement throughout this entire thing. that hasn't really stopped, and that Joe Biden still has this 20 to 30% that hasn't moved over to another candidate yet.
And I think the final point on Elizabeth Warren, when John, this week, she spoke to a group of Native Americans and started out by saying, basically, I screwed up and I'm sorry. And I know some people are hurt and I'm sorry. And that seemed to, you know, be accepted by them, and she moved on.
Yeah, I mean, there are sort of two things there, right? There's the apology itself, and then there's the show, don't tell nature of being willing to apologize for a mistake. She doesn't go around saying, I'm the kind of person who apologizes. She just apologizes.
Yeah.
And there's a contrast there, both with Donald Trump and to an extent with Joe Biden, who has been reluctant to say the I'm sorry part mm-hmm. of the I'm sorry's. You know, with the crime bill in 1994, he's basically mm-hmm. proposed repealing massive sections of the crime bill, including the federal death penalty, but won't say he's sorry for the crime bill. When Elizabeth Warren came out and said she wanted to repeal the crime bill, it wasn't that much different than his proposal for repealing the crime bill that wasn't called a repeal of the crime bill. So I think there's something to that showing, that demonstration. The key for her is going to be trying to explain to non-Native American groups the sort of, I'm using this term the wrong way, but the sort of cultural appropriation of saying that she was something she was not to perhaps get ahead.
Right. It felt like a really good tool in Trump's toolbox, that kind of Pocahontas epithet. But we haven't seen him use it in a little while. I don't know if it's run out of steam.
There are Republicans who believe that's the magic bullet against her. And I don't think that that is likely to end up costing her the presidency.
Even Donald Trump said he probably used it too soon. He should have saved it until the very end. So my favorite part of the roundtable every week is getting everyone's favorite story of the week. We all talk about so much, we cover so much, we write about so much, but every once in a while there's something that just grabs your attention. What was yours, Leah?
This week? I have two very quick things.
Okay.
One is that if you listen to the Fresh Air podcast or radio show with Terry Gross, she interviewed a kitten lady who nurses kittens from birth, and it's adorable and is pro fostering pets. So listen to that if you want to be happy. That's of course my story idea. But I also just want to plug that people should be paying attention to the Kentucky governor's race as well, where the Democratic Governors Association just released a poll that had the Democrat up 9 points. So that's a race that we should not be sleeping on and should be reading all the stories about that.
So Mitch McConnell, beware, right? Do you think that could
voters
spill
differentiate
over?
Between federal and state races? But we'll keep watching.
Too bad. Okay. What got your attention this week, John?
The Washington Post has a story about how Major League Baseball players don't know what day of the week it is ever. And I identify with that because I often don't know what day of the week it is. But also it's very funny about baseball players. But in terms of politics, I thought there was a really interesting moment this week with Bernie Sanders, who made an adjustment sort of to his Medicare for All plan to address some concerns that labor had. And it was sort of first run out there in the media as him changing or reversing positions. But really, it was a tiny additional provision, a tweak, if you will, where he basically said he was going to put out a federal rule that required employers, if they get savings from Medicare for All, from not having to pay for healthcare for their employees, that they would root those savings back into wages or additional benefits. And it addressed the concern of unions that by going into Medicare for All, they would give up benefits, healthcare benefits that they had negotiated previously in contracts with their employers. I thought this was a really interesting move by Bernie for two reasons. Number one, he's not really known for listening to his critics and adjusting what he's doing as a result of it. So I thought that showed some political dexterity on his part that's unusual for him. Number two, it kind of maybe boxed Elizabeth Warren in a little bit, because she is now the only person who supports Medicare for All and has not made some sort of provision for this union concern.
Right. And my favorite story of the week, I can't resist. I'm sorry. Sean Spicer. Sean Spicer will be on the next season of Dancing with the Stars. How far they have fallen, right? It's just the idea that he would agree to do that, I find, is just appalling, but not surprising. I mean, he's desperate to keep his name out there and try to restore his reputation somehow. I don't think this does it, but it gives us all the freedom to just go wild with...
Bill, you're jealous.
As I saw somebody said, instead of tap dancing to everything his boss wanted, now he's going to be dancing with the stars. You could go on and on, but...
That's why none of us would agree to do Dancing with the Stars.
There are many reasons why we would not agree to do Dancing with the Stars. For me, personally.
Right. Yeah. Do you think he'll be pushing a podium as he's tap dancing? Who knows, right?
Poor Sean.
That's one way to wrap it up. Poor Sean. And that wraps up today's roundtable, too. Leah, thank you so much. John Allen, thank you so much for being here. I've got a quick parting shot before we say goodbye. And I hasten to add the parting shot. My comments, my opinion only, not necessarily reflecting the comments of the panel. But, you know, the way I see it for Democrats, there was good news on the 2020 front this week. Both Jay Inslee and John Hickenlooper dropped out of the running, which means there are now only 22 Democrats left running for president. Actually, Seth Moulton has dropped out too, so now that's 21. Even better news, Hickenlooper announced that he's going to run for Senate in Colorado against Cory Gardner, considered one of the most vulnerable Republicans up for re-election. Now, Beto O'Rourke, Steve Bullock, and Stacey Abrams should accept reality too, and follow Hickenlooper's lead. Not one of them is going to be the Democratic nominee for president, but each of them could be their state's next senator when Democrats need to flip only 3 seats to take back control of the Senate. Yes, Beto electrified the nation 2 years ago in his race against Ted Cruz, but he'd also have a great shot against Texas Senator John Cornyn, who's limping into re-election with only 37% approval in Texas. And Steve Bullock, with 60% approval rating in Montana, would be a slam dunk against the largely unknown Steve Daines. Meanwhile, even though she hasn't announced for president, Stacey Abrams keeps teasing about she's still thinking about it, or maybe thinking about vice president. Forget about it, Stacey. You'd be the strongest candidate for Senate against Georgia's David Perdue. That's where you should run. Yes, for Democrats, winning back the Senate is just as important as winning the White House. Beto O'Rourke, Steve Bullock, and Stacey Abrams could make it happen. Only their bloated egos stand in the way. And that's it for the podcast here this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks again to our panel, John Allen and Leah Skaranam. Thank you all for listening. Remember, we depend entirely on your support, so please go to apple.com, google.com, Spotify, or tune in. Subscribe to the Bill Press Pod and give us a great big 5-star rating. That's the best way to help us grow and grow the podcast every day. Next up, don't miss this one, my interview with Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch. Why did he suddenly turn against Donald Trump? And will he help mount a successful challenge to Donald Trump in 2020? That's the next edition of the Bill Press Pod. We'll see you then.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.